Champions Chessmod family, today we have a special guest, Grandmaster Aleksandar Indic from Serbia, not officially or officially the tallest grandmaster in the world. Just a few days ago became European champion, and here we have a Chessmod podcast. Alex, big congratulations and thank you for coming to Chessmod podcast.
Thank you very much, Aretic, for invitation and congratulations.
You should be very tired after such a tournament, and I know when you are playing and fighting for the top places, usually it consumes more energy, right?
Usually it takes quite a lot of energy just competing, but especially fighting for first place. And actually now after adrenaline went away, I feel like I played two long events in a row. Just quite drained overall, but still running that winner's high in a way.
How do you feel to be European champion?
Well, it's pretty cool so far. And initially, my goal for this tournament was to secure qualification for the World Cup. But things started rolling, and I didn't want it to end. So it went all the way.
That's something I wanted to ask, because I used to play in European Individual Championship as well, and I noticed there are few types of players. First type are like masters who try to play just strong against strong opponents, hopefully make grandmaster norms. There are second type of player who try to qualify, and then there is top players who try to win the tournament. And usually players between like 26 to 26.50, they try to qualify, and usually like plus four and you qualify. And tell me, you said at some point it started to roll and you said, okay, let's win the tournament. Which round it happened and how did it feel?
Well, initially, sort of career-wise, I always wanted to win this tournament. In the future, at some point, it's actually on my mind for quite some time. But originally for this event concretely, I wasn't really sure, is my preparation going to be that great or not, and all that stuff. So in a way, I wanted to secure my qualification, and round by round, things started going really well for me. And I felt that I'm in a pretty good shape overall, and I didn't want it to stop. So I started preparing even a little bit more before every game. And it was kind of a positive cycle of good things happening.
Why did you have this goal, dream to win European Individual Championship? Why this one?
Well, in my opinion, it's actually pretty, pretty kind of gladiatorial event in a way, because it combines lots of strong players, young underrated players, old legends, current strong players, and in the way I see it, winning that is not an easy task, and I think even top end guys couldn't be clear that they're going to end up in top three or win this event overall. Because one game can go wrong, and there are like lots of strong people in general. And to me, it feels winning a strong event, strong open events in today's time is actually quite a feat. So I'm quite proud to have this victory under my belt now.
Yeah, and you finished the tournament without losing a game. I briefly went even through the games. It didn't seem to me that you had some lost games, and there were some, usually because with winning tournaments, there are some luck needed. When I went through the games, it seems like everything went smooth, right?
Yeah, in a way. And actually, that's pretty unusual for my kind of style, because frequently I have couple of quite flashy games and couple of, rainy days. And then in this event, actually, I don't know if people call this maturity or something kind of like something's got under control inside me. But overall, I'm pretty happy with both level of play and I think my games were overall with full of life and excitement, but also high quality. So that's actually something that I strive for in the future, and I'm really, really happy to see.
Nice. You know, when we met in Budapest, I told my wife and introduced you that way, not to the tallest grandmaster, but I told this is one of the creative grandmasters in the world. And because you were playing Benoni, and I'm also fan of Benoni, even when I was 26 and coaches would tell me it's time to learn some more serious thing, I would prepare like, okay, I'm preparing Semislav, tomorrow I'm playing against Ryzantsev, Aeroflot Open, he's 2700, okay, I will not play Benoni, I will play Samislav. I prepare the knight, I prepare in the morning. I went to the game. He played d4. I looked at the board and I said, no, my heart wants to play Benoni. You know, I need to play Benoni. And I'm such a big fan. And you are one of the guys that I followed probably all your games.
Thank you.
We were both playing Benoni, and I was loving that often you were going not the main lines of the Benoni. You had always your variations, your territory, and I was feeling how good you are filling those positions and when it's coming to fighting. It worked to me, you just want to somehow get out of the opening and then fight.
Usually that was the case, but I'll start from the creative remark at first. For me, it's kind of funny because I don't think you use it in that meaning, but people, when they say creative, usually means he is quite stupid when it comes about risk. He's taking like crazy risks and usually put it like, he's kind of not fully serious. He goes for all the crazy stuff, frequently loses. But he's very creative. But actually, I don't think you use it. And I take it as a compliment. But in general, yeah. I think general public, when they say creative, it's usually, maybe he's a little bit too dangerous for his own sake sometimes.
And, well, that one I call more fighter.
Yeah.
When it's many people can agree.
That also makes sense. And about Benoni, actually, one of my, I wouldn't call it, let's say, first coaches, but the one that I was inspired by is also legendary Yugoslav and Serbian grandmaster Velimirović. And he was a lifelong Benoni player, even though he usually played it from a delayed move order. And my father also, I come from a chess family. My father is international master. He also played delayed Benoni. So I started from a young age, and I was really inspired by all the cool games from the guys who used it. I don't know, Fischer in the match, Kasparov versus Korchnoi in Lucerne Olympiad 82, yes. Velimirović victories, Stals victories. And I really wanted to sort of give my mark in that opening. And I'll be humble enough to say that I think I played what? I'm one of the best guys who played in the world, who played the best.
Yeah, totally agree. I was following all the Benoni players and you were like top. And I knew, like, you really knew many of your games by heart. By the way, about the delayed Benoni, Ivanishevich also was playing Benoni and even had a book, right? Is he also influenced by Velimirović?
Well, I'm not sure about that. I mean, in general, I think he was inspired because they even played a couple of times and he liked him quite a lot and appreciated his style. And there was a funny story. Sorry for jumping around, but there was a funny story
that he mentioned. We love stories.
That he mentioned about Velimirović. Velimirović at the time was working with Grandmaster Aleksandar Kovačević and Grandmaster Slaviša Brenja from Serbia. And Ivanišević started making waves in Serbian chess circles. And at the time, Velimirović was around 55. And Ivan was around 20. I think it was 1997, like a first national championship, that Ivan started really rolling. And Velimirović was preparing for Ivanišević. And he asked his students, like, who is this baby Ivanišević? Like, who is this new kid? And Ivan mentions that story frequently, and I quite like it because it's a new wave and a new style. And actually, Ivan is really a Serbian legend and one of the guys that I really enjoyed as I was growing to play with, learn it, and especially get inspired from his games. So, yeah, back on the topic of delayed Benoni, he also published a book in delayed Benoni that I enjoyed, also in the modern Benoni with the pure move order. And yeah, of course, I read the books, I enjoyed them. And he also mentions a couple of my games that I kind of liked. So overall, it's nice to see, and I enjoyed it quite a lot.
Yeah. Yesterday, I was talking to Gabuzian, with whom you were roommate in Abu Dhabi and got close. And he said something about you. He said, you know this, Alex is like me. No openings, but talented.
Well, I kind of agree, but in recent years I'm actually working quite a lot, and
yeah.
I don't think that's fully true. In general, I try to use my taste and knowledge of the game in order to find openings or something that I consider to be underrated. And in general, I don't just like to blindly follow what people do, but also I try to come up with something that is both correct, a little bit underrated, and especially that has some life inside that, because the way I approach my games, and especially black games, is not only to neutralize white and try to shut down the games, but in general, what I think people should aspire to, chess players, is to get a game. Because especially in today's time, with all this openings prep, and I think you can be, we all can be quite creative in that way, to try to get a game, because otherwise, if you're just playing theory and all that, and long, I don't know, 30-move preparation, it kind of takes a little bit of taste out of it. So I try to balance that, not to be naive in a way, because of course I'm using computers, I'm following all the main stuff, but also try to give some kind of mark and how I see the game and certain variations.
I'm 107% with you in both things. One is that if you want to win tournaments, Akopian gave me this advice, Vladimir Akopian. He said, if you want to win open tournaments, you need to fight for black for win. Otherwise, you cannot win the tournaments. You will be number five, number six. He says, yes, when you want to win with black, often you will go to risky openings, and very often it will not work. But it's better to play five tournaments, one get number five, one get number one, win one of these five tournaments, and then blew up the other three, then five tournaments, and finish somewhere between 5 to 10. And he said it both good morally and financially, so you need to fight for black.
Well, in general, I tend to agree with that. I would just like to sort of, if possible, to be the bad ones, to be, let's say, mediocre, not to be complete fallout. So in that sense, but of course, I think winning tournaments is important. So in a way, sometimes, especially in the opens, you have to to take that extra risk. So overall, what I try to do in recent times, as I was up and coming, I think I was using mostly, let's say, some modern game, and especially when I was younger and around the GM title. But with time, I think that was not great overall, because I learned how to sort of suffer and fight and take over the game. But in a way, as I started playing a little bit more regular openings, but sometimes sidelines, then I realized, okay, well, why I was giving all this space? Why it seemed to me like I was chasing my tail for quite a number of years, and now, like, wow, people are not crazy to play E4, E5, and kind of gradually start to take over. And overall, what I would add on the topic of trying to win open tournaments in today's time, I would say that one underrated topic and very important is keeping the tension in the position, not only going for the sidelines, because overall, I'm not. At this time, I don't think I'm going to go for too many sidelines anymore. I'm trying to take the higher ground in a way, but I think keeping the tension inside the position that are even, let's say, a little bit slower maybe, and sometimes dry, I think that's a necessary skill for today's chess.
Yes, agreed. We'll get to that in a second. One thing about I wanted to share with you is this is how we build also our chess mode openings. We didn't want to go, for example, E4, C5, the main Sicilians, open Sicilians, where people need to remember millions of variations and then every day see what are the news, what are the new engines are saying, and maybe if top 10 players should do that or top 20. If you are just even below master, but even master or grandmaster, I found it's like much more practical to find not sidelines, but healthy sidelines. As you mentioned, underrated sidelines. And then that gives you such a practical advantage, because often you are playing some healthy sideline where you have hundreds of game played, blitz rapid, while opponent is facing it first time. So it's big practical advantages also you are getting.
I completely agree with that, because to my understanding, I think people are sometimes too rigid with their approach and thinking. In a way, even let's say some gambit like Chigorin, okay, it's not fully correct, but if you want to bet that people are going to remember it, know how to handle those positions, be sort of ready to jump upon opportunity to try to punish you, I think if you have like lots of online experience or over the board experience under the belt, I think you can make pretty good results with that. Rappard showed it when he was up and coming, 27+. Actually, on a quite high level, he won versus Levon Aronian. Amazing game, and Levon needs no introduction. So overall, I think people are sometimes a little bit too hesitant to try. And in a way, I guess that's why the Benoni worked very well, because I have lots of experience. I don't consider it to be fully correct, but it's not like people think that it's like just a bad line. I think people get a little bit too comfortable thinking they have many ways to get advantage, but it's much more subtle than that. And add to that they don't have experience, they don't know how to handle structures, maybe they don't feel well when they're being attacked. So I think that's lots of pluses that goes into Benoni. Yeah. And in general, I'm enjoying playing it so much, and I would suggest anybody who is willing to test it out and see for themselves. Even though I sometimes like to joke and consider it like a weaker brother of King's Indian, but that's more of an inside joke. I try to scare people away sometimes.
I used to play King's Indian, you know, and how I switched to Benoni, I was always loving to play with C5 and transition to Benoni.
Yep.
And then after King's Indian, when you often like get like really squeezed with strong positional player, Benoni is more fully, and yeah, I'm there.
In a way, it's more risky at times, but also it seems that sometimes it's kind of easier to take over, because it doesn't take too much for white to go wrong. And also, one thing I would like to mention for all the players out there, usually as computer starts giving around equal or maybe 0-15 for white, it means black is in great shape. That's usually the kind of like rule of thumb.
Yes, 100% agree, because the engine has the algorithm and space is big for him.
So in a way, once I start seeing those evaluations, I consider that to be easier for human to play.
Yeah, true. Not to bore our listeners who don't play Benoni, and it is my and your big passion.
Yeah, that could take quite a while, so we should.
Yeah, I wanted to come back to something very, very important. You said you were speaking about keeping tension and about fighting. And recently I was in a podcast with Perpetual Chess, with Ben Johnson, and he was asking me about why chess adult improvers are often having issues of improving. And one of the things I mentioned is that people often think that it's just learning chess more, you play better. But it's not always true, because if you don't have this fighter inside you,
yeah,
it's very difficult. So often the fighters with less chess knowledge will have big dominance over players who have more knowledge, but they are not fighters.
They are kind of hesitant in a way, yeah?
Yeah, share your thoughts about this importance of fighting spirit.
Well, I'm not really sure how it works for adult improvers, because I am not coaching frequently, or in general I have one or two people that I sometimes help with help, and it's not easy, because it seems to me that chess is kind of, especially for improving to, let's say, GM level, because it comes with certain trajectory. Let's say you are young. People fear, they feel like they have something to lose versus you when you're younger. Like they're afraid that people are going to troll them, or they're going to feel bad about themselves, like I lost to the kid. They're afraid of the prep. They're afraid. There are sort of many, many factors that go into that, that it's easier to improve when you're younger. Also, add to that, being hesitant when you're older, you're kind of probably less eager to experiment and go for it. And on the fighting side, I guess it's important to try to realize that it's not end of the world. I mean, I'm saying that, and even though I felt sometimes when I lose the game, it's end of the world, of course. But in general, I guess it's important to have that in mind. And one thing that I feel people have problems with, and I'm not sure how to deal with it, because people who are playing, let's say they're adults and playing chess, in general, it should be enjoyment. Like, I don't know, you are at a nice place, you're playing the game that's supposed to be enjoyable, but somehow it's actually very easy to get lost in the sauce of chess and you get quite put down when you lose. So I cannot say I have solution to that, but in general, I guess people should be able to try to think and find some balance inside that, and to have an option to enjoy the games, not only to be kind of crushed by results.
I also feel like it's...
I don't know. For me, I kind of gave myself a pass because, okay, let's say I'm playing professionally. Of course, I'm supposed to be annoyed when I win, when something goes wrong. But then I look aside and I see people who are much older. They're coming and supposedly enjoy. And I see they sometimes feel like they're much more angry than me. And somehow things don't add up. And to me, it feels that with time, it started being kind of a normal occurrence, but it shouldn't be. And I guess people should try to dig deeper inside that, to try to feel what's wrong. Something is being attacked inside us, and it's not easy to handle always.
There is a nice story I read recently. It's about Novak Djokovic. So he's having a bad tournament, and after the match, he's breaking his tennis racket. And he goes and says to his coach, "I'm not playing tennis anymore." It happened many years ago. And the coach doesn't say anything. And after some period, coming back to Djokovic and asks, "Why did you start to play tennis?" And Djokovic says, "I love the game." And the coach says, "Yeah, tell me about more. Why you loved?" And Djokovic shares that, Novak shares that in his childhood he would sleep with the tennis racket in his hands. He loved so much. And the coach is asking, "What happened to that, your love? You are so focused on results, win. You forgot about the love. But why you started? It was from love. It was because you loved the game." Novak is listening, and after some period is saying, "Yes, you are right. I'm back tomorrow." And he's coming back and crushing the next tournament. And this is a nice story. How important is the love for what we have started, to at some point reflect back to remember why we have started? Because often the competition, the results, the social pressure, we might often put ourselves in another place and we forget why we have started. And this love why we have started, this is what I advise to all our Chessmo students, and we have shared it in many articles, that yes, there are results, goals, etc., but never forget about the fun. You started this for love for the chess. You love the game, you wanted to have fun. Don't forget about that.
Well, I would just put that it kind of depends if this is a professional career or something. If it's professional career, you kind of need an extra. You have to have, in a way, darker side as well to it, because it's not always flowery. But in theory, I agree that that people should enjoy. And for me, it's not always easy, especially because I'm tied to the quality of play. And also, I approach it frequently also as an aesthetic, not exercise, but endeavor. And I, for example, feel pretty angry when I feel that the game was completely dry, nothing happened. Like, why am I spending my life doing this? And that kind of makes me in a way quite hot.
that's very interesting.
So, but I guess I come from a different side, and I'm not suggesting for people to take this. This is somebody who sort of entered quite deep, same as you. We entered too deep in a way to only go forward with only one set of emotions, let's say.
True. Do you think that when you are loving something, it's initially hobby, the more you are getting professional there, the skills are growing, but the love is a little bit going down?
Well, I guess for sure, but I also guess it's kind of your eyes are starting to open. You start to see the whole picture, because, for example, when you say, "I think love is a kind of a huge word," because when you say you love thing, that usually, in my opinion, should mean that there is nothing that could happen for you to stop. Like, you really love it. But in chess, I mean, if I start losing, if I play like a complete amateur, I'm gonna hate. Oh, of course, I'm not gonna love it. Love is so far from my mind at the time that it's.
Have you ever withdrew from the tournament?
Only when I was really sick. I went to the hospital once and had to. Otherwise, no.
But if it's going very badly and you hate it, you want to stop,
well,
how do you deal it?
I only did it in Title Tuesdays, because sometimes I think people are being dirty, so I kind of prefer my sanity over continuing. But the OTB, I always play.
How do you find the strength, power, mood? Because everything is going bad. You don't want to play chess. You feel you are playing like an amateur, and tomorrow you need to play another round. How do you keep yourself motivated and playing the next round?
Well, the way I see it, more motivation is not really how I approach it. For me, competing in chess is similar. Like, let's say, I don't know, you're walking with your family or your wife or something, and somebody attacks you. And in a sense, it doesn't matter if it's a group, if it's better, you're going to do something about it. And kind of I approach chess from similar. You're in competition, maybe you lost three in a row, but again, you have to. It doesn't matter if you're going to lose or not. It doesn't matter if you don't feel like, if your, I don't know, stomach hurts, if you feel like your confidence is non-existent. It's more of a you have to do it. So I approach it just, it's something. I mean, I might lose it, I might lose badly, I might get embarrassed, but it's kind of what I do. So I usually approach it from this is what I do, and I consider it important enough for me to do what I can. And usually, let's say, I don't have to motivate myself in that way. That's like, I don't consider myself, let's say, like a coward when it comes to chess overall. So I'm going to go out, and I don't care what's going to happen anymore. I mean, I'm going to try, but in that sense, if it makes sense, I don't know how.
It's not just make sense. I'm just applauding, bro, and I'm going to ask my teammate to cut this moment and put separately these 2 minutes. Your answer that it's not just about motivating, it's just imagine you are working with your family and somebody attacks. That's just so powerful.
In a way, I didn't completely mean like I'm imagining that, but more like level of importance. This is what I do. Okay. This is kind of important. And I guess it's similar way because you're not going to think. It's something is that important that you're going to do something about it. Doesn't mean that you're going to win or you don't know what's going to happen, but it's kind of, in a way for me, like a no-brainer. This is what I have to do. Maybe it's about self-image or something like that, but it's that type of feeling.
Wow, fantastic answer, man. Fantastic. Tell me about, did you feel pressure during the tournament when you were close to win the tournament, like the last round? Like you are leading, yeah? So you are understanding, you were dreaming about becoming at one day
for sure,
and you're close.
Especially since I started being a leader of the tournament at the half. So there were like 5 long days of me preparing, thinking and everything. And whether you want it or not, you start thinking, wow, this is going really well. Like, is there a chance to win this? How can I sort of continue playing this well, etc.? But overall, I guess it comes with time. You also get, I forgot who mentioned, but he said something. I think it was some UFC fighter. It was something along the lines, of course, there are butterflies, but right, I try to get them flying single formation. Like, so sort of, I try to channel them, of course, especially, let's say, before the last round, because chess is quite brutal. And for me, usually the best parallel with chess is with martial arts, because the cost of single mistake is that high. Let's say in tennis, in basketball, you can score. He can outscore you for two putters, and then you pick your form, and you start just you're just scoring lots of points, and you're back, and you win. And in chess, and let's say martial arts, its cost of a single mistake is that high. So you have to be so alert all the time, and I think the pressure is of different kind in a way. And as I mentioned, especially before the last round, I try to prepare lots of things because he plays many different openings. But I also understood that, okay, there is actually a decent possibility that I played for 10 days great chess, and on the 11th I didn't perform well, and that I'm not sure that I'm gonna be even in the top 3 anymore. So that's actually what you have to face, and it's not always pleasant, but you kind of have to go out and see what happens. And I guess, in a way, that makes it sweeter when you win, when you succeed, because you knew that it was important. You knew that it was, let's say, a big moment in a way, and that you performed well on the big stage. And you kind of take that experience with you for all the future and kind of like, ah, but I already did this, let's say. And especially I won Serbia national championships, and I'm not going to compare it like with European, the same level. But in general, it's about winning the events. And I think that previous experience helps, and you kind of know that, okay, this is normal. And usually all these things happen before the game. Once you're at the board, it's started, you know, things are rolling beyond our control. So there is no more, and you kind of enter the thinking part, and things start rolling, and you feel, at least I feel much more calm as the game starts, especially after the opening phase.
What do you say, especially after the opening?
Because for me, I wouldn't call it like a complete fear, but I am quite hesitant that I don't fully believe that I remembered my preparation well. That's actually so. In the first stage, I am trying to enter a little bit more slowly in order to sort of lay the foundations for the game. And usually, because it happened a couple of times that I thought, okay, I was preparing this, I played almost instantly. Then I realized I mixed move order, and I immediately entered the worst position. Then I feel really, really bad about myself, because if I didn't know anything, I could come up with a decent move. But because I thought I have some distant memory, then I entered the bad position, and I was not even lazy. So it's actually... You start doubting your IQ and overall power. So it's so in that sense, so opening phase. And for this tournament, what I did is I almost repeated this for until the beginning of the round. And it's not sort of flashy work, but I think it was an extra effort that was needed for me to try. And also, especially because my second was helping me and he was working quite a lot, I didn't want to sort of disappoint him in that way. I tried.
Is it secret who was the second?
Not anymore. Actually, he is a grandmaster from Serbia, Miloš Perunović. He was helping me with concrete preparation for this event. And he's also a coach of Serbia. He's not a team captain, but he was there to help with the prep.
And he was not playing, he was just coaching.
He was just coaching, and we started in recent times, and he is kind of like a second to me now, and so far it's going well. So in that sense, what I realized that sometimes when I was on my own, I am kind of, it seems to me that it's easier for me to disappoint myself, but when I say to something, hey, we are going to do this, then I'm going to be very fully professional. So it's easier for me to honor the contract with someone else than with myself. I don't know if you had similar experiences or not, but...
Yes, absolutely. And I was reading a book. I read a lot about peak performance. I watch lots of courses. I have coaches with whom I am working. So I was reading this Brandon Burchard book. He has he had six pillars or something about peak performance. And one of them was this topic. He was like about something what you said. Find something, someone that is bigger than you, because those that don't let you to relax.
Yeah.
It can be when you're playing for your country. It can be when you're playing for your family. You yourself, it's easier to let down than when you have some people else.
Exactly. Exactly. And for me, what it seems to be either when I play for national team or when I sort of want to make other people happy. Because also when Serbian national team won European championship last year.
Just last year, yeah?
Yeah, last year. And of course, I was satisfied. It's historic result and everything else. But also when I saw people from the Serbian chess community, how happy they were, I actually got much more happy. It's kind of like a secondhand happiness that actually works quite a lot on me. And then I was like, okay, this is actually quite cool. So so in that sense, I kind of found what works for me in that regard.
Which one felt happier, if you can compare the one with team becoming European champion or this one individual? I guess different feelings should be.
Yeah, the different feelings on the level of importance, I would say national team. But personally, I would put this because I really saw my family being quite emotional about this. And I was really happy to see to see them happy. So yeah, I would say this, or maybe this is just the most recent one, but to me it felt like things are kind of starting to make more sense, and there is some kind of wholeness to the whole journey. So I'm quite happy to see them and proud and receiving all the congratulations. So that's quite cool.
I saw your post when your legendary coach Velimirovic passed away, and your stories and the gratitude. And I know that often we as professionals, we don't have moments to share our gratitude. So here we are now.
Yeah,
you talked a few words about Velimirovic. You said a few words about like Perunovic. Please,
sure.
The people whom you are grateful for this success.
Yeah, if I started from the beginning, I could mention probably like dozens of people who sort of participated in me reaching this place. And what I would say is that it seemed to me that I was quite lucky when it comes to chess, because I come from a chess family. My father is an international master. My older brother is candidate master. I, from a young age, had a library at home of chess books from my father on Russian, on different languages. I was also lucky enough to have a very early stage, I cannot even call it career. As I started playing, like 7, 8 years old, there was a kind of a good chess community in my municipality. It was like some weekly blitz events that I started playing when I was really young, and people were all smoking. I was feeling like a hammer after I went out from like the last class in the school, etc. But there are a couple of moments that were really crucial for my career, I would say. One is when I started working with Velimirovic around age 14, 15. It was organized and sponsored by international master from Serbia, Vladimir Damjanovic. He used to be quite a good chess player, and he decided to sponsor promising chess players from Serbia and connect them with the legendary grandmaster Velimirovic. And that's how things started really rolling for me. And in 3 years working with him, I went like from 2130 to over 2500. So I really got inspired, and we were meeting, and I was really ecstatic, because to me it felt like I found my calling in a way. And things started working from there. And then at some moment after I finished high school, I was thinking of going to US to study there, because there are lots of colleges who are getting scholarships and they have strong teams. But at that time, I got into contact with another legendary grandmaster, Morozevic. Actually, we had the opportunity, and we played each other a couple of nights in a row on play chess. We started chatting. He was one of my favorite players at the time, and I mean, still is a complete legend, unique
creative
personality.
Another word
so,
I wanted to say.
So, in that sense, I was very happy to both meet people who I admired and work with them and try to learn from them. So we started working in that time. I was able to get insights into his way of thinking, how he approaches things. But also, I'm quite stubborn, so I like to use my own way, because you try to learn and steal, but also then start applying and create, let's say, your own shoes in a way. And
sorry for interrupting. Morozevic contacted you and asked for training together.
We kind of started chatting, and at first I was not sure, because he didn't play under his name, and I had my suspicions if it's him or not. And he said, "Well, I'm coming to Belgrade. I kind of stopped playing professionally. I'm coming to Belgrade. If you want, we can meet. We can go to some seaside for 5-7 days to meet. And kind of, if you like each other and I like what I see, if you, I consider you talented or whatever, we can then start some cooperation and see how it goes." And at first I thought, okay, maybe somebody's trolling me, because he's one of my favorite players. Like, he wants to come to me. I took screenshots or like photos, like, wow, come on. I mean, I felt so happy.
How old you were?
Hmm?
How old you were then?
It's 2015. I am
20. Yeah,
around 20. So
yeah,
and we met, and as I was entering hotel, I recall. I mean, I'm meeting the number two guy. I mean, I find him. He's like a real legend of the game. I sort of learned from his games, and I'm meeting. I'm like, okay, is this real? And hi. And then we started playing, meeting. I went to his place. I was trying, okay, not really helping him when he played one event, but trying to help some small seconding work. And he he was very, very open, cordial towards me, and hospitality was great. And we started cooperating, and actually it continues to this day, and we are still in touch. So that's a very important influence. And I think I picked up lots of practical things from him. And also, in a way, the way I see it, it's not only like that you're learning, like, do this, do that. But it's more like if you have good observational powers, you can find out how he approaches, how he considers certain players, their styles, what he wants to do versus them, and all that practical things that I think are very important. So in that sense, I consider myself blessed in general when it comes to chess. I was able to meet the people who I admired. I'm very, very good with Ivan Ishevic, with all the guys. And to me, it seems that now there is kind of like a circle coming where I kind of figured out what I want in chess, what I want to create, how I want my style to comes out. And now I'm kind of trying to make it like a tunnel vision and just do lots of work and try to improve my results.
Great. I interrupted you and we went to Morozovic. So we were with Vladimirovic, Harop, Damjanovic.
And of course, on Vladimirovic, I just mentioned what I would like to say. He was great. He had so many great stories, and he was inspirational both as a human being and as a chess player, because he was risking it all. He was going for the wild attacks, like all the sacrifices on f5, d5, knights and pre, etc. And one thing that I really like about him is that even though he was in his 70s at the time, he was always approaching almost everybody that he talked with like on an equal footing. It's not like some, I don't know, high-chaired professor who is coming and like, boy, do this homework, we'll meet. But more like we are friends or something like that. And I think that's actually, it seemed to me at least, quite unique for a chess world, because you're meeting people who are both 8 years old and like 12 years old. And in a way, it's similar approach. Everybody kind of gets full respect in the chess world. So I think that's quite cool about our community.
This is nice, right? It's transition from him to you, from you to transition one day to younger Serbian players countries.
And especially as you mentioned, younger. And what makes me quite proud that we did this success with winning European as a national team, because I was also able to meet Gligoric. He was honorary member of our club, and Velimirovic in much more close, in much more detail. I went to his flat, I met with his family. But in general, I always considered myself like we are some kind of a bridge. I mean, like a chess movement in Yugoslavia, Serbia, and I always felt like, or a bridge or a tree, let's say. And I'm kind of a next generation, and I don't want things to fall when I'm strong, let's say. So in that sense, I'm quite happy that we are continuing something that lasts for quite a while. And for a brief moment, it went downhill, but I think now again, it's a golden period for Serbian chess.
Two questions that I'm super interested personally. First one is how is chess in Serbia? I mean, did the federation met you in the airport, the country, municipality? How did they meet you as a European champion?
I'm not really sure. We can get compared to Armenia, because I heard you guys are really going the whole way when it comes to arrival of chess players, winning Olympia, etc. But I have received like hundreds of congratulations and lots of nice words. And in the next couple of days, I'm going and visiting lots of TV stations, giving interviews. It's quite a hype. People are sort of from my hometown. They noticed as well, and it's actually became quite a big news so far that I see, especially in the chess community. But overall, people noticed. And in general, also, I would like to mention a couple of close friends, family, president of the Chess Federation came to meet me at the airport. And even though it was quite cold, which is appreciated. And overall, it's quite cool. And I would like to continue in this passion and prolong with good results.
Great. Great, man. I know how tired you are, like, it's just a few days after the tournament. So I'm going to ask you the last question, just my personal questions that I had in my mind when we met in Budapest, but I didn't ask. So I will ask now. Not the best question to finish the episode, but I cannot keep it. Why did you went to chess instead of UFCF and some martial arts and fight? Well, I remember when I saw you in Budapest, like 2 meters big, my neck was like, it's hurting already.
Actually, I'll jump briefly because that reminds me of one story of me with Velimirovic. Once we had some break in the trainings, and because it was me and a couple of other young promising players, our family met together. It was Velimirovic, some kind of dinner celebration. And he started saying some nice things about us, like they're good boys, they're listening, we are working, etc. And he said, but I have one problem with him. And he was shorter than me. I don't recall, maybe if he was 1.65, 1.7 meters or something. And he said, one problem with him. And I was like, okay, what's the thing? Like, I don't recall doing something bad. And he said, whenever I look at him, my neck gets stiff. Like I'm looking at the Almighty. So he was like, being funny as well with that. And about the UFC and basketball, actually, I would like to mention other thing. I was training basketball for a couple of years. I was not really that good. And at times, it was a collision with basketball games and chess tournaments. And I started getting into chess more and more. So I decided to go the chess way. But my parents liked to tell one story because at that time, they asked me, like, okay, but you can do this, you can do that. Like, why chess? And in their words, I said at the time, but in chess, I'm already a name. So ego was already quite high since young age. And about UFC, I enjoy watching it from time to time. I cannot say I like it because there is nothing to like about it. It's too brutal, yeah. But it's more fascinating to me and interesting, and I find parallels with chess. And in a way, I actually occasionally went to kickboxing classes. Because I was curious.
I saw some photo in Instagram.
Yeah. So in a way, I'm curious about that as well. Would like to, try, but I prefer not to fight because a couple of times that I had some light sparring, it comes with a headache afterwards. And I'm like, I mean, chess is more important. So guys, please be courteous towards me and no need to go all in.
Chess is safe, right?
So,
safe,
yeah,
way to fight.
I'm trying to earn a living with my brain. So please have that in mind.
Yeah, I completely understand. I also practiced Kung Fu, practiced Muay Thai. And I remember when I was in Thailand, the first thing I told my coach...
Were you a national coach there?
Yeah, I was national coach of their team. And I was practicing Muay Thai because you are in Thailand. Muay Thai, traditionally, you have to go. And it was like, coach, I'm not going into the ring. I'm not going sparring.
Yeah.
I have a problem with my head. So please, just me and you.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
I would like to learn the art without the consequences. I need. Yeah. I don't need like complete reality demonstrations.
Yeah. Alex, thank you very much for becoming a European champion just after a few days coming here. I can imagine how tired you are. There are lots of interviews, etc., happening, and you came here. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for sharing this. That moment that. When tournament is going bad, but it's like you have to do. It's just like somebody attacks your family. You don't need motivation, and you just do. I love it. It's the moment of today's episode, and I hope our Chessmont family and champions loved it. Alex, one more time, huge congratulations! Thank you again, and
thank you very
luck.
Much. All the best with your projects and podcast, and of course, Chessmont. And hopefully, we will be in touch.
Thank you very much, my friend.